Can a harrowing experience become a catalyst for action? It did for Brandon Wolf, a survivor of the 2016 Pulse nightclub shooting in Orlando. Brandon has since become a nationally recognized public speaker and advocate for LGBTQ+ civil rights and gun safety reform, and has written opinion pieces for CNN.com, Oprah Daily, USA Today, Newsweek, and Out Magazine. But his life prior to that tragedy is every bit as dramatic and inspirational as his subsequent career. And Brandon tells that story in the new book, A Place for Us, a memoir. Here's Brandon to share five of his key insights.
Hi, I'm Brandon Wolf, a survivor, political nerd, and a guy who sometimes uses storytelling as a form of catharsis. My debut book is called A Place for Us, a memoir. Part of selling a book proposal is interviewing with publishing houses. You gotta pitch the idea for your work and make it attractive to a potential investor. At each of those stops in the process, a recurring question materialized for me. Is this a book about the Pulse shooting? And the answer is, sort of. You see, I've always said that you can't fully grasp the gravity of the tragedy at Pulse if you don't understand why spaces like Pulse Nightclub exist for queer people in the first place. So, A Place for Us is about so many more things than one harrowing night in the summer of 2016. It's a story about racism, homophobia, grief, pride, and belonging. Today, I want to share five key insights from A Place for Us with you. The first insight is intersectionality isn't just a buzzword. With a concept of identity dominating the current political discourse, so many words designed to help us describe our existence have been hijacked and reduced to Twitter fodder. The unique lenses through which we see the world are boiled down to talking points and funneled into political ads and fundraising emails. Intersectionality is among them. The term intersectionality, coined by scholar Kimberly Crenshaw in 1989, describes the complex relationship between overlapping identities and the discrimination and privilege those identities precipitate. It's also become a political lightning rod, misconstrued as a tool to convince certain people that they were born victims and are powerless over their fates. But intersectionality isn't just a buzzword. It's not some sanitary academic theory either. Intersectionality describes the very real experience of standing in the crosswalk where multiple identities meet, frantically dodging the cars speeding by. For me, intersectionality was being called the N-word while strolling down the sidewalk and being afraid that the guy hurling it might beat me up for being gay, too. Intersectionality was trying but failing to be a social chameleon, fighting desperately to be a black enough for some spaces and white enough for others and masculine enough to escape any space unscathed. Intersectionality isn't a theoretical concept or a talking point. It's reality for so many. And the faster we learn to celebrate the power of intersectional lived experiences, the more likely we are to build a future that has room for everyone. The second insight is, you don't have to save the world to earn your place in it. Growing up, out of place and struggling to find somewhere to belong, I did all the things I thought would help me assimilate. I got good grades, joined every after-school club imaginable, ran for student body office, held down a part-time job. I guess I thought that if I was just exceptional enough, those around me would forgive me when I was finally honest about who I was. After Pulse, that same natural desire to prove that I belong on Earth crept back up. I poured myself into work, grinding my mental health down to frayed ends as if life itself was an act of penance. That desire to prove ourselves is hardwired, especially for those whom society has historically told to work twice as hard for half as much. But here's the honest truth. You don't have to save the world to earn your place in it. You are worth more than simply what you can produce. Yes, your work matters. Your passion matters, your contributions matter, but so does your joy, your rest, your peace. Don't feel as if you have to abandon those things, lugging the weight of the world on your shoulders and solving each crisis single-handedly just in order to earn a spot on Earth. You already belong here. The third insight is forgiveness isn't agreeing to absolve wrongdoing, it's an act of unconditional love. I've always been bad about holding grudges for far too long. I would say it's because I'm a Leo, but I honestly don't know enough about astrology to know if that's accurate. I held a grudge against my dad for decades. Growing up, our relationship was strained, to put it nicely. He didn't understand me, and I didn't understand him either. He had trouble communicating his emotions and would often lash out irrationally. His words stung a lot during dinner table conversations, and his silence after I came out cut even deeper. But in the wake of the shooting, I forgave him. I think he forgave me too. Not as an act of amnesia, shoving the hurt of the past into a mental waste bin, but as an act of love, an offer of grace. I didn't know how many more birthday cards I would get from him or late night phone calls we would have, and I couldn't bear to waste another moment carrying the baggage of decades past. Forgiveness is a powerful tool and a necessary step in the healing journey. When we lose someone we care about, we have to forgive ourselves for waking up each day knowing that they will never have that chance again. We have to forgive ourselves for feeling squeezed by the stress of the world around us, knowing that others may be suffocating. And we have to learn to forgive one another, not just when it's easy, but when it's hard too. And not as an agreement to absolve each other of the harms we've caused, but as an act of unconditional love, an offer to build a different kind of tomorrow together. The fourth insight is dare to love with abandon. Love is such a journey. As children, we love recklessly, pouring our whole hearts into anything and everything. But day by day, year by year, our love becomes more wary. We lose a puppy, and the sting of grief makes us pull back just a little. Our playground crush doesn't feel the same way, and the pain of rejection hardens our hearts just a touch. I loved my mother recklessly. And when she passed away when I was 12, it was as if my capacity for love itself was suddenly muted. That loss reshaped every relationship that followed. I dated, hesitantly, made friends with caution, always afraid that one day they might be gone. But my best friend Drew taught me to use that muscle again, to love unconditionally and courageously. There's simply nothing like it. Humans are not immortal. Relationships end. Goodbyes never really get any easier. But if we spend every moment with emotional walls raised high, petrified of what lurks on the next calendar page, we'll miss everything. The uncontrolled laughter, the smiles until our cheeks hurt, the profound, soul-altering joy of connection. Nothing is forever. So dare to love with abandon while we're still here. And the fifth insight is, community will save our lives. There's a pervasive culture of rugged individualism in America. Pull yourself up by the bootstraps, they'll shout, as if every obstacle in life is designed as an individual event at a track meet. But that's not how we as a species got to the top of the food chain. We worked together, created language, passed on knowledge, solved problems hand in hand. Humankind hasn't progressed this far by forging a million individual paths through a tangled jungle. We did it by walking the same path collectively. We would do well to remember that truth right now. When the temptation to pull society apart at the seams is high, we have to recommit to stitching our futures together. If we choose division and rancor, we'll fail. If we choose chaos and mistrust, we'll fall apart. Perhaps the most important lesson I learned in the wake of the Pulse tragedy was that we can't get through these things alone. We have to stand, arms locked, shoulder to shoulder. I've always said that community has saved my life more than once. I think it's what we need now, too. Life is not an individual activity. It's a team sport. We're truly all in this thing together. I want to thank you for giving me a chance to share a few insights from my new book, A Place for Us. I hope you find as much joy and hope in the pages as I do.
Thank you, Brandon. That was Brandon J. Wolf with 5 Big Ideas from A Place for Us, a memoir. You might also enjoy our book bite for The Family Outing, a memoir by Jesse Hempel. I'm Michael Kovnat. Thanks for listening.